We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Monday, beginning a week, and what are we beginning with? Heat, intense heat. It's going to be a very hot week, particularly the first half of the week. And I'm going to talk about in a moment the heat advisory and what we're doing to address it. But first, I want to talk about a challenge we have been facing over these last weeks as a result of the perfect storm that we're experiencing here in this city. Crisis layered upon crisis, all the challenges created by the coronavirus. And we know there's been an uptick in shootings in recent weeks. We know there's been a real problem with violence that must be addressed. And we know the best way to address it is with communities. And you see all over the city, community members stepping forward, elected officials, clergy, Cure Violence Movement and Crisis Management System, a whole host of people and organizations occupying the corners. What that means is taking back the neighborhood, making clear that violence won't be acceptable. All the good people who work so hard in this city want their neighborhoods to be safe, need their neighborhoods to be safe. They're doing something about it. And they understand, and we understand, that the best way to achieve lasting safety is with communities and NYPD working together. And the outpouring of community involvement and support has been striking. It's also important that the city government keep investing in communities, going at the root causes of so many of the challenges we face, and investing particularly in our young people. And that means investing in youth programs, youth centers. We're going to be talking about that in a moment as well. But because we're facing a perfect storm, and no one can doubt that, all of the combined crises and traumas together have created an aberrant situation where we saw crime uptick, and a lot of the normal realities just weren't there to address it. We've got to fix that now. Thank God New York City has made so much progress on the health front. We got to keep that progress, defend that progress. But we also have to restart all the pieces of the criminal justice system to make sure that if, God forbid, someone has committed an act of violence and means to do harm to their community members, that we can do something about it. So the bottom line is, our criminal justice system needs to get back to full strength. Our courts not only need to reopen, they need to reopen fully as quickly as possible. Now remember, the disruption here has been striking. And I want to say to everyone in the court system, to the DAs, NYPD, everyone went through massive disruption. A lot of people were sick. It was impossible to do some of the normal things because of the precautions that had to be taken. So this is very clearly something where we're all in it together. I want to make sure everyone hears that. We are all in this together, and everyone's been through a tremendous amount of disruption. But now is the time to overcome that and start to rebuild so we can really address the violence issue together. A striking reality that there's a huge backlog when it comes to cases involving violent crime. Only 50% of firearms charges have even gotten to the point of indictment. And obviously, we need to go from indictment through the trial process and determining the fair resolution. And those who need to feel consequences have to experience those consequences in a speedier fashion. That's not happening right now. So I want to call together all of the players. I've sent this letter this morning to the chief judge and the five district attorneys saying, let's all work together. Let's get this right. I want to convene everyone and figure out what can the city of New York do to help each of you and all of your colleagues to get this right, because again, just a little beginning of the court system won't get it done. We need to find a way to get back to full strength. And there are obvious issues of health and safety. We want to help. We have a lot of spaces we can make available, personnel to help address the health and safety issues. But I'm going to work with all of my colleagues, the DAs, the chief judge, everyone in this system to get it right, because we owe it to the people of our communities. And I have spent time with some of the families that have lost loved ones. That is a searing, painful experience when you see what happens to a family, especially now thinking today, in the day of his funeral of little Devel Gardner Jr. and meeting with his family and the pain they're going through. No family in New York City should ever have to go through that. And when you think about that pain, it's incumbent upon all of us to re-glue the criminal justice system, get it going at full strength, and make sure there are consequences for those who would harm their fellow New Yorker. Now, that said, that is how we bring all the pieces together, but we have to keep moving each and every piece as energetically as possible. And this is why our focus on young people is crucial. After really huge challenges in March and April, all of us together were able to rebound and restart summer programming for young people. I want to thank the City Council for the leading role they played in helping us put that together. But we also have to do more. We have to create more and better safe spaces for young people. Think about it for a moment. If you're a young person in New York City, you need safe places to go. You need places to grow and develop. You need places for recreation and culture. We don't have enough of those spaces. We need to create more. So today we're going to talk about one of the examples of that kind of investment that's going to make such a big difference. Right in the heart of Brooklyn, in a community that needs this support. And remember what's so important here. This is about our priorities. And this is an example of resources we took from the NYPD budget and are putting into young people, reprogramming our resources to help young people, to put them on the right path, to stop problems before they begin. So today we're going to talk about the new recreation center that will be created at the Nostrand Playground in Flatbush, Brooklyn. And it's going to be amazing. It's going to have an indoor pool and a track and a kitchen for community cooking lessons and all sorts of wonderful amenities that will help community members to have great options, especially our young people. And we're going to begin a process of engagement with the community this fall on how to specifically create this center in a way that will be most helpful to the community. And now I want to thank and celebrate and let you hear from the two driving forces behind this great project. Both of them put a huge amount of time and energy into envisioning this and bringing it to life. And I can attest to the many times they spoke to me about the need to get this done, and we're getting it done now. So first I want to turn to Assembly Member Rodnice Bishop.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. It's a pleasure to be here today to speak to all of New Yorkers, to talk about how we are transforming lives and how we're transforming the recent reallocation of funding that's going to go directly into our community, needs, our youth, our seniors, our engagement. Again, my name is Assemblymember Rodnice Bishart. I represent the 42nd Assembly District, which is the core of Brooklyn, of Flatbush, and also where the Caribbean immigrant thrives and Little Haiti thrives. I am here today and pleased to join Mayor Bill de Blasio and my colleague, Councilmember Farrah Lewis, to announce the planned opening of a community recreation center, again, in the heart of Flatbush, Brooklyn. The recreation center will be built, as you heard, at the Nostrand Playground and will serve as a safety for our youth, a hub for learning and community and civic engagement. People of all ages looking to exercise and get fit will be able to come to the center to improve their health. The center will also feature an outdoor space to allow for social distancing as is needed. As you may know, our community has faced an uphill battle this year. My district has had the highest rate of infection and fatality of almost any neighborhood in the city regarding COVID-19. Racial disparities in our education, housing, and healthcare systems have been highlighted by the pandemic. We are also combating an increase in shootings. For years, children in our neighborhood have been looking for a place to go where they can safely gather with friends. When there is no oversight, youth can become disengaged and motivated by peer pressure. We need to protect our children from the risk posed by unstructured free time. And this is more important now in the face of the pandemic and growing racial disparities than ever before. This year, we face these injustices head on by passing a slate of police reform bills in Albany and here at City Hall, where our total budget was reorganized, reallocated to address these issues. However, the work is not done. I will continue to champion these issues on a community level and on a legislative level, especially when we talk about banning racial profiling. But combating injustice does not end there. We must also invest in our communities. Initiatives like the Community Recreation Center, which will have the capacity to transform lives and to transform our neighborhoods. When we invest in our youth, we invest in the future of our community, and the people of Flatbush and the people of Brooklyn will thrive. I also am proud to announce that this community center will be named after the great, wonderful Shirley Chisholm, who served as both the first African American and the first Caribbean American woman elected to Congress. As many of you know, Representative Chisholm was the first Black woman to run for a major party for the President of the United States. She was an inspiration to the large Flatbush community in all of Brooklyn and all of the United States. I believe that the legacy of the Representative Chisholm will live on through future generations who are inspired by her example, and that one day a young woman from our district will follow her footsteps to Capitol Hill and beyond. Now, as the chair of the Minority and Women Business Enterprise in the New York State Assembly, it also gives me great pleasure that we will be naming the Workforce Development and Technology Business Incubator Center that's within the Community Recreation Center after the late Dr. Roy Hastic, a Grenadian legendary community activist, founder of the Caribbean Chamber of Commerce and Industry, who was at the forefront of the Caribbean economic development growth in the state of New York. He was a force, and we want his legacy to be remembered by. I want to thank you all for your support. As you heard from the mayor, this center will be very comprehensive with a state-of-the-art indoor pool, something that this community have been deprived for so many years. And we're finally happy that we are getting some answers. We're going to get a pool, indoor pool, indoor track. We're going to get a kitchen for cooking classes. We're going to have a workforce development. We want to make sure that we reintegrate our youth and those who were previously incarcerated. We also want to acknowledge that we have a big immigration population and have immigration services and social services that will address things like healthcare and housing and dental and eyesight for our children. So we have a lot that we're going to be working with. Again, I would like to thank Mayor Bill de Blasio. I want to thank the New York City Parks, Commissioner Mitch Silver, and I want to thank Councilmember Farrah Lewis, who actually been on this project for a very, very long time. And if it wasn't for her advocacy, working with the mayor hand in hand, we would not be having this announcement today. So I want to thank her. And again, I want to thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Assemblymember. And thank you for fighting for us in Albany and fighting for justice every day. And since you said exactly correctly that Councilmember Farrah Lewis has been extraordinarily persistent in making sure this came to fruition, I want to congratulate you, Councilmember. Thank you for your huge focus on young people in particular and all that you and the City Council have done, but particularly your achievement today with this recreation center. We'd love to hear from you.
So good morning, everyone. Thank you so much, Mayor de Blasio, for your support, for your advocacy, and for listening to East Flatbush and the people in my community. I also want to thank Assemblymember Bichot for her support, as well as Parks Commissioner Silver for his support in ensuring that we can now formally announce the Shirley Chisholm Community Recreation Center with the inclusion of the Roy Hastic Business and Tech Incubator in East Flatbush. I'm very proud of my community and for this new installment. Our young families and seniors have waited with much anticipation for a safe space that they can call their own, a hub for learning, recreation, community, and civic engagement. This state-of-the-art community and recreation center will be a beacon of inspiration and innovation, where people of all ages and backgrounds can connect and prosper with expanded access to much-needed resources in a centralized location. For years, residents in my community have advocated alongside elected officials for a community center in East Flatbush that would bridge gaps in opportunity, information, and technology. As our city and my district, the 45th Council District, like so many others across the city, grapple with the increase in shootings, this state-of-the-art recreation center will be a pivotal turning the tide. The center will help us curb gang and gun violence. And this is how we occupy our blocks and our corners. This is how we're gonna stop shootings and save lives. This is how we're gonna ensure that our community remains safe by taking a critical step forward. I will continue to work with the mayor, the Parks Department, as well as the Department of Design and Construction in hopes we can expeditiously break ground so that this recreation center can finally come into fruition. Congratulations, District 45. Thank you so much, Mayor. Thank you, Assembly Member, and thank you, Commissioner Silver.
Thank you, and you will make sure we expeditiously move this. You I'm sure you will. So I'll be hearing from you. All right, now, going back where I started at the very beginning today, we're celebrating this good news about the Recreation Center, but we're also dealing with a huge challenge today, and that's the heat we're all facing. And I want everyone to recognize, take this heat situation seriously. Everyone, look, New Yorkers do a great job of looking out for each other. In this situation, please, look out for the people in your life. Look out for the people on your block, in your building. Seniors in particular, make sure they're okay and they have what they need. Everyone's got to stay hydrated. People should not be out in the heat any longer than they have to be. So take it seriously today and tomorrow. We're talking about temperatures and heat index nearing 100. So this is serious stuff. Now, the city will have cooling centers open today and tomorrow across all five boroughs. To find those cooling centers, and please, if you need them, take advantage of them. They're a good, safe place to be. You can go to www.nyc.gov/chillout. And, of course, you can call 311. Anyone who goes to one of these centers, you're going to find there's social distancing, there's face coverings. We're taking very seriously. We have to continue to fight against the coronavirus. But right now, the heat's front and center. So you can go to one of these centers and know you'll be safe in every way. And we opened up public pools, a number of public pools this Friday. We have 8 more coming this coming Saturday, August 1st. And we'll talk about that again later in the week. But already we've seen the pools that have opened, a huge number of New Yorkers coming out to enjoy them and appreciate them. And again, doing it safely with all the right social distancing. So the pools are going to help a lot, and more coming up and opening up this Saturday. Okay, let's go to our indicators. Number one, daily number of people admitted to hospitals for suspected COVID-19. Threshold is 200. Today's report, 54 patients. Number two, daily number of people in health and hospitals ICUs, the threshold 375. Today, 286. And number three, most important, number of people testing positive citywide for COVID-19, threshold 15%. And today, so again, this is the best number we've seen. We've seen it a few times. But we're back at it again today, 1% in New York City. That's absolutely outstanding, and that's because of all the hard work all of you have put in. And I keep saying it, everybody, please do not let up. I was out and around the city this weekend. I saw a lot of people with face coverings, not as many as I'd like to see. Everyone, remember how important those face coverings are. Keep that social distancing. Help the people in your life to remember how important it is. Let me do a few words in Spanish. Debido al calor extremo, los centros de enfriamiento estarán abiertos hoy y mañana martes. Todos los que visiten los centros tienen que usar mascarillas y mantener la distancia entre uno y otro. Necesitamos protegernos del calor y también del virus. With that, let's turn to our colleagues in the media, and please let me know the name and outlet of each journalist.
Hi, all. We have with us here today Assemblymember Bichot, Councilmember Lewis, Police Commissioner Shea, Parks Commissioner Silver, Emergency Management Commissioner Criswell, and Senior Advisor Dr. Varma. With that, we'll start with Andrew from NBC.
Morning, everybody. Hope everyone is doing well. Mayor, my first question is about schools. Our understanding is that Jamani Williams, the public advocate today, calling on a one-month delay in the start of the school year, and then after that, asking that the DOE open it for kids under 10 only. I'm wondering your reaction to that plan, and to clarify, when exactly will parents know what the plan is at their school?
Andrew, what was that last part? When will parents know?
Yeah, because there had been some confusion about you saying you wouldn't make the call until September, so maybe you can clarify that. But
yeah.
Essentially, your reaction to Jamani Williams' plan to delay the school year, and then if you could clarify when exactly parents will know what the plan is at their individual school.
Sure. First, appreciate the public advocate's suggestions. We'll certainly look at them. Right now, our intention is to open on schedule and to open with all grade levels, but again, with blended learning. Some part of the week kids in school, some part of the week kids online, and then for those kids and families who prefer just online, that will always be an option available to all families. If they want to do all remote at any point, they can do that. So to the bigger point, Andrew, the fact is, and I think I've said it a number of times, but I really want to try and nail this point. We right now have a plan, Plan A. Plan A is open in September, maximum number of kids in schools, blended learning. We've talked about it now for weeks and weeks. Every individual school is taking that basic plan and refining it according to their own space reality and their ability to accommodate kids. And they'll be speaking with their parent community over the next weeks and give them exactly a sense of how the system will go. So parents will have ample time, weeks ahead of school opening, to know exactly what the schedule will be. We're putting more and more childcare options into play. All of this is moving intensely in a crisis atmosphere. We're creating as we go along. We've got 6 weeks to put it together, and we will. But again, remember the health realities that we see around the country and we see around the world. Today, at late July, we're doing very, very well in New York City. You heard 1% testing positive. We have to hang on to that. 6 weeks from now is a long time. So the logical thing to do is we're going to hear from the state in about 10 days or so. They're going to give the basic decision. Then we're going to keep building from there. And then we're going to inform parents of what their specific plan for their school will be. And then ultimately, we have to see exactly what the healthcare situation is in the days leading up to school beginning. So I was a public school parent for the whole time of my kids being in school. Right now, parents should plan very clearly on their kids being in school if they want them to be in school. If they prefer them to be remote, that's great. But we're all going to be watching the data, the science, the healthcare indicators till we get very close to school beginning. And it would be irresponsible not to, Andrew. It would be irresponsible to make a decision in July or in August for something that's going to happen in September. That's what we've learned from looking around the country. Make the final decisions based on the facts at that time. Go ahead.
Just as a follow-up to that, what do you think of the idea of delaying the school year for 1 month so that you really know that the precautions are in place and that you have enough teachers? Because part of what we're hearing is you'll make the plan, and then it may be that you don't have enough teachers to make that hybrid plan actually work. So does it make sense to skew the start of the year to make sure you have the bodies in place and to make sure you have the procedures in place?
At this point, no, Andrew. It doesn't add to the equation to delay. We've surveyed parents. They desperately, a huge majority wants to get kids back in school for the right reasons, to help them learn again and for their social development, because they know it's a safe place and there's food available and health support available. So that is the plan, but we'll watch every step along the way. Huge amount of energy and effort is going into working through the pieces. We're working very closely with the unions representing all the folks who work in our schools. And we have a plan. And if something happens that causes us to need to adjust that plan, we'll talk about it. But right now, we are moving forward with our plan.
Next, we have Henry from Bloomberg.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. How are you doing today?
Good, Henry. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. My question has to do with your support of violence interrupters, cure violence, community-centered crime fighting that's beyond police. The investment the city has made is relatively minuscule, right? I mean, it's like $39 million. If this program is effective, why is the investment so small?
Henry, I respect the question. I would say that there's an assumption in that question that it kind of misses the history. You go back to the beginning of our administration, the city of New York was barely investing at all. And we have steadily increased the amount of investment and continue to work with this model to prove its efficacy. And it keeps coming back clear that this works and it helps. And we've been building out the investment more and more, and we will continue to do that. So I think the point is a lot of these organizations have been building up themselves from the grassroots. A lot of them have been creating organizations from scratch. It's not like going to some big, you know, nonprofit that's been around for decades. These are truly grassroots community organizations. It takes time for them to build. But no, I think the growth pattern's been very strong and it will continue to develop further.
Okay, if I could just follow up on that question. If the programs are so effective, why are we seeing so much violent crime? I mean, why are they unable to stem the violent crime that we're seeing?
Well, I think I appreciate the question, but again, I think everything has to come back to this perfect storm we're in. And I will say it every time I'm asked, you cannot take a pandemic and layer it with a massive unemployment crisis that only rivals the Great Depression, families that don't have any income anymore, kids that can't go to school, you know, the court system not being able to function, a huge number of police officers were sick for a long time. You cannot take all these dislocations and add them one on top of another on top of another and all the frustration and pain that people have been through and expect business as usual. So we're dealing with an extraordinarily high bar here in terms of the hand we've all been dealt. But I can tell you for fact, Cure Violence Movement and Crisis Management System have been out there making a huge difference. They've been doing it in terms of social distancing. You've seen them out in force in recent weeks addressing violence in the community. We've seen some incredible success stories over the years. And now we see this movement coming forward in this new situation to find solutions. So no question in my mind, this is part of the solution overall.
Next, we have Juliet from 1010 Winds.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Mayor. How are you doing?
Good, Juliet. How you been?
Fine, thank you. Wanted to bring up the encampment issue. A listener sent me photos of an encampment at Prospect Park Pavilion at Plaza West next to the Green Market. He says he contacts 311 five times, nothing happens. Calls the local precinct, told it's not a police matter. I hear similar stories from others who reach out. So is there a way to have a proactive, consistent response to identify and dismantle these encampments?
Yeah. Juliet, thank you for raising that. One, yes, that's what we've had for years. That's why when I said years ago that we were getting rid of the encampments, we set up a system to very systematically make sure they're identified, they were addressed, including offering all the people involved the opportunity to come into shelter and get the services and support they need. So homeless services plays a crucial role, obviously. Sanitation, NYPD, any and all agencies we need. Summer in Parks, Parks Department plays a role. And it's worked overwhelmingly. Again, we've had a lot of dislocation in recent months, but we are going to make sure that this is put together clearly and strongly. It is a citywide strategy. To your specific example, I'm glad you're raising it. We're going to go deal with that today. Whenever I get these reports of someone at a precinct said something, I really appreciate if you ever get specifics, I want to make sure the precinct commander knows that someone in the precinct said that. Of course it is a police matter. It's first and foremost the Department of Homeless Services matter, but police are there to assist if needed, and no one should ever blow off a problem in the city government. And certainly I want to know why 311 didn't respond more effectively. So we're going to go do a little bit of investigation. And Juliet, if you could give us any details you have, that'd be really helpful, but we will address that site today.
Yeah, okay. But my experience with people that I speak to reporting these to me, the responses are very inconsistent. I've seen personally where encampment material is either completely removed and where there is follow-up by the NYPD with local residents on a daily basis, and others where the material is just piled up down the block so that people who return to that spot just take it back and lay it back out. So what is the better way to do this? You know, when your office calls out, there is the response. But it seems like unless that happens, it's very inconsistent.
It should be consistent. It's obviously the former, not the latter. Remove the material and offer the services and not allow the encampment to come back. But Juliet, to be fair, we have managed now for years to make sure there was not the kinds of encampments we had in the past, which were large and numerous in New York City. We'll fight them back every time. We'll give people the services they need. But you're absolutely right. I want a consistent approach. And the consistent approach is there's no possibility of the encampment reasserting. But I will tell you, having asked many, many people this question, they are a rarity in this city, and we want them to be non-existent.
Next, we have Julia from The Post.
Hey, good Monday morning, Mr. Mayor. This is for you and the commissioner. As I mentioned to both of you last week, the slowdown in courts does not correlate with the sharp uptick in shootings, according to the NYPD's own data. For example, 16% of the people arrested on gun charges currently have an open case. So what do you attribute that increase, and how can you fix it outside of returning the courts to full speed?
Yeah, I don't agree with your assumption. I think there is a huge piece of this that is the fact that there is no outcome. If someone is arrested, there's no process. Remember, whether someone is in jail based on arrest or out of jail after being arrested, on bail or whatever it may be, you can't adjudicate the case until there's a trial, and that determines whether someone should be allowed to be on the streets or not. And jury of their peers and the whole nine yards, we just haven't had that anywhere near the level we need. So it is, by definition, a crucial piece of the equation. And again, Julia, against the backdrop of a perfect storm where many, many factors are affecting the situation, including things that the NYPD is working to do better as well. We're not saying there's one piece to this. And anyone who tries to typify it that way, they're just lying through their teeth. I've said 1,000 times, the commissioner said 1,000 times. It's a perfect storm. There are many, many factors. City of New York needs to do more. NYPD needs to do more. But if you don't have a functioning court system, you can't follow through the process the way we normally do. Commissioner.
But if you don't have a functioning
court system, I think you're on mute.
The way we
can't hear you, Commissioner. Hold on a sec. You may be on mute.
Hey, Julia. How are you, Mr. Mayor? Can you hear me?
Yep. There you go.
Yep. So, Julia, I would turn the question around and just say, in the last 4 months, I would ask somebody to answer the question, how many people have had a court case disposed of which resulted in them being sentenced to state prison or Rikers Island? And you're going to see very low numbers because cases really are not being disposed of, to my knowledge, unless there is no jail attached to it. And you know, the court system, the violence question, I mean, it is indisputable. We have about 2,100 gun cases just in the last 2 years that are still open, half of them indicted, and almost all of them are walking around next to you and me every day on the streets. It is not disputable.
Go ahead, Julia.
Okay, my second question is on the, you know, the Cure Violence movement. You know, you mentioned, Mr. Mayor, that it takes a while for these grassroots movements to get up and running. The leaders of the movements say the same thing. So until they really become full force, You know, what is the NYPD doing to stop this increased bloodshed? We had 15 shootings on Sunday, including 7 murders, 47 for the week compared to just 17 last year. So how long until the NYPD's new crime fighting strategy kicks in? And what are you going to do to keep the violence down in the meantime?
I appreciate the question. Julia, you know, a week ago, the commissioner and I outlined the basic strategy, and he'll speak to it. But basically, it is taking more officers and applying them to the very pinpointed areas where we're seeing the biggest problems. It is bringing out the community, not just Cure Violence, but all community leaderships and organizations to be a part of pushing back against the violence. And we will continue to develop a Cure Violence and crisis management system over the coming months and years and making it a bigger part of what we do in New York City. But really, again, it comes back to the NYPD's absolutely proven ability to adjust to a new challenge. That is what CompStat is all about. This is the whole concept we've seen for a quarter century. Many big challenges the NYPD was able to overcome with refined strategies. And Commissioner, I give him credit. I've watched him in CompStat. No one understands this ability to adjust and take in new realities, new information and try new strategies. No one understands it better than Commissioner Shea. So, Commissioner, you want to add?
Commissioner?
Yeah, good morning, Julia. Again, so when you look at what we saw last week, absolutely unacceptable. You're right. 15 shootings just on Sunday. That was following a day of pretty heavy protests in Manhattan on Saturday. When you look at the 15 shootings, 8 of them were in Brooklyn. When you look at what we're doing in terms of the mayor outlined it, putting significant resources into the areas where we know that there is ongoing gang violence occurring. We're also working closely with community members, local elected officials, just raising awareness in these areas and trying to get a grassroots approach as well as pinpoint deployment and investigations. Just last week, we closed 11 separate murders. They did not occur last week, but this is moving backwards. But the arrests occurred last week. We closed an additional 14 shooting incidents that were non-fatal just last week. I think if you look at the breadth of the, you know, the NYPD, whether it's my Twitter account at NYPD News, Terry Monahan's, or the individual precincts, you're seeing gun arrests picking up and starting to be made, which is a positive. And I think all of this is a start, but this is going to take some time to address the significant uptick in violence that we've seen.
Next, we have Rich from WCBS 880.
Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Hey, Rich, how you doing?
I'm okay. Listen, I'm just wondering, you may have had eyes on this. So the cleanup of the graffiti at the DOE and the Dinkins Building and the old Surrogates Court, how is that going? I mean, I assume you're taking a look at it as you go by.
Yeah, from what I've seen, it's coming along well. I have not looked carefully enough at every nook and cranny to know, and I know some of the older buildings, there's been a couple of challenges, but the last I've seen, I think it's going well. And look, this again, anytime we see this on a public building, we are absolutely going to clean it up because we don't accept it being there. But I think that's coming along well. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, and this is a little bit out of left field here. So I was taking a look at the seal of the city of New York as we sat sort of waiting for the news conference here. It's a man in pantaloons holding a rope with a loop at the end of it, presumably a trap or something. And then on the other side of the windmill and a couple of barrels, you have a Native American who's holding a bow. I'm just wondering whether you or your commission or somebody is taking a look at that seal and wondering whether how relevant it is these days.
That's a great question. I think we have to look at a lot of things, and I appreciate you asking the question, Rich. From time to time, I've looked at it. It's a good question. It's something of an unclear image, what it's saying to us, but I think that's exactly right. It's the kind of thing a commission should look at carefully and decide if it still makes sense for the 21st century.
Next, we have Deborah Lee from Bronx Free Press and Manhattan Times.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks. wanted to follow up. The city controller released a letter today questioning why it is that an audit that he conducted in April 2018 that showed that NYCHA playgrounds, the majority of them, nearly 800, had dangerous or deficient conditions, and that it's not been addressed. And in fact, since the NYCHA playgrounds have been reopened, that has not been, neither has it been addressed nor has a plan, which was promised to address these issues, been released. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, we'll get you more details, Deborah Lee, but I just think that is not accurate. NYCHA playgrounds, real work has been done to improve the issues. Some are still being worked on, but they're a relatively small number that have any serious issue that, as I understand it, causes them to be offline and more major work has to be done. A huge effort was undertaken by NYCHA to reopen playgrounds once that was allowed. And to my understanding, a really big majority of their playgrounds are up and running. So we'll get you the latest facts, but I don't think that characterization is accurate.
All right, and then on another topic, there's been a renewed call to have Commissioner Shea more specifically address why it is that it seems that police officers are just not being disciplined, or for that matter, that the concerns are not being taken seriously of those that say that violent actions and overly aggressive actions by police officers are just not being addressed. And some have gone so far as to call for his resignation or to ask you to prompt his resignation. And so I wonder if you could speak specifically to that renewed concern, and also to the incident that had the police officer essentially assail a homeless person and have those charges then both by you and the commissioner questioned. I mean, essentially, you know, that incident in particular has sparked some new concerns. Can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, the commissioner's here, and I'll let him speak to it as well. I've been very clear about my faith in Commissioner Shea. I've known him over these whole 7 years of the administration. I've seen what he can do, both in terms of addressing crime and violence, but also his belief in neighborhood policing, and even more so in focusing the police on working with young people in a whole new way. And you'll remember back in February, Commissioner talked about a new vision for the NYPD. I talked about it in my State of the City. And if it had not been for a global pandemic, that's exactly what we'd be deep in the middle of right now, reorienting the NYPD towards a different and better relationship with young people. And we still have to do that now as we fight back against the coronavirus. But on the specific reality, I want to be clear. Every single incident, every single video, not only needs to be investigated quickly, but we need to show results to the public quickly. This was not the historic reality. We need to do it now. We need to be transparent about the outcomes. We now, thank God, have the change in Albany in terms of the 50A law that's going to allow us to be much more transparent. But what I think we have not done well enough yet, and it's a new reality, but we have to get this right, is to show the public very consistently, here's a video, here's a case, here's the immediate decision, whether it's a modification or suspension or not. Here's a decision on whether there's further discipline. Here's the outcome. And that has to be seen in a direct line in real time. And I've said it very publicly and had the conversation with the commissioner. This is what we need to do better. Now, even in the height of some of the most challenging realities weeks ago, the commissioner made it a priority to address some of the incidents that were particularly troubling and to either suspend or modify officers and indicate that the discipline process was starting for larger charges. We just need to keep that as consistent as possible. Sometimes it's made more complicated, Deborah Lee, when there is, again, another part of government involved. And some in the media have said, oh, that's not a big issue. It is a big issue. And it's something we need to sort out and streamline with those agencies. So that's the overall situation. You can expect to see a more routinized approach going forward that'll, I think, be more helpful to you and the public tracing each of these cases. Commissioner, if you could speak to that and specifically speak to the situation with the homeless individual, because if we can bring some closure to that, I think it would be helpful for everyone.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the question, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Listen, I think, Mr. Mayor, you touched on most of it, and we certainly have spoken, you and I, a number of times about the need to be as transparent as possible and as do it in a swift manner. But the other thing that's missing from that is there has to be an investigative process. There has to be, and it has to be done right. And I think I've balanced that. Where I see something wrong, I've come out strongly. and I've been pretty swift in a couple of cases recently in terms of changing duty status or doing other things. I make the decision as I see fit, and I'm going to continue to do that as the police commissioner. And I balance always, at the end of the day, what I think is right. And you know, you're going to have probably some people that don't agree with it and some people that do. And that's what I've found across the entire city. In terms